I have a very dear friend who's one of the finest lay ministers in the Catholic Church I have ever met. His name is Eric. And tonight I'm going to steal from Eric, because last year at his home church in Portland, he delivered a reflection on this gospel that I thought was beautiful. It revolves around the question, what is finished? Jesus says, it is finished. But what is finished? Sin is not finished. Systemic sin and personal sin, neither one is finished. When I say systemic sin, I mean those things we do together that we have sometimes unthinkingly allowed to creep into our culture. We hear the words of systemic sin in this gospel. Take him away. Crucify him, says the mob. We have no king but Caesar, says the religious authority. Systemic sin exists now. We persecute people as a group much more easily than we persecute them one-on-one. And we still do it. So systemic sin is not over with. Personal sin is not over with. We liberal children of the Second Vatican Council in the 60s and the 70s would like you to believe it, but it's not true. Peter says, I do not know this man. Personal denial of Jesus' teachings, when we come face to face, one on one, with a challenge from which we quietly walk away, gives life to personal sin. Suffering is not done. Jesus never promised that it would be done. We suffer from the sins of others. We suffer from our own. Father Richard and I have a favorite teacher in common, Father Richard Rohr, and it was from him that I first heard what I thought was the most accurate explanation of sin and its consequences. We are not punished for our sins. We are punished by our sins. We are not children of a punishing God, but we still choose what seems to us to be the more convenient path. And we are so often wrong. Jesus' work is not finished. It's why this church is named what it is. We have inherited the task. In 2,000 years, we've made perhaps not as much progress as Jesus did in 3. But we are still invited, still pulled forward for the Eucharist, for the contemplation of what our God offers us. without reservation. Jesus' work is still countercultural. The signs are right next to you in the empty space in the pew. This remains a countercultural practice. So don't be angry with the people who are not here. Don't be proud of yourself for being here, although I'm proud of you for being here. Be grateful to our God who continues to invite us, who invited me when I was not here, who invited, I suspect, each one of you when you were not here, invited us here to be nourished so that we could take on the work of the mortal body of Jesus of Nazareth as the living body of the risen Christ. There's just one more thought I want to leave you with, because it's something that troubled me for a very long time before I started to take this faith tradition seriously. And it is the line that we don't hear in John's Gospel, but we hear in Mark's Gospel. And a lot of people have a lot of trouble with that line. My God, why have you abandoned me? It's not troubling if you understand it as a prayer of a good Jewish man. Your homework is to go home and read the 22nd Psalm, which begins with the words, my God, why have you abandoned me? And ends with the declaration of the glory that comes to one through lived faith. Take all your doubts, take all your fears, and take it to that psalm and bring it to the cross and bring it to the Eucharist. Because fear is not the opposite of courage. Courage is not the absence of fear. Just as faith is not the absence of doubt. Faith is where the doubt takes you. Does it take you forward in trust, or does it make you turn away and run? Does the fear stop you, or does the fear invite your faith to come alive? Jesus prayed the ultimate prayer, starting with the depths of abandonment, coming all the way through to tomorrow night. I would ask us all to do the same.